Here we go.
It's the first quarter of the big game. You want to toss up a Hail Mary.
They've done studies, you know. 60% of the time, it works every time.
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
I'd like to be pimps from Oakland or cowboys from Arizona, but it's not Halloween.
Look, my friend, this is just where you and I differ.
Grow up, Peter Pan, Count Chocula.
If my answers frighten you, Vincent, then you should cease asking scary questions.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody's hands go up. And they stay there.
Hello, hello, thanks, Action Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Jim Lawler in studio. We've got Matt Byrne on the board. Interesting weekend all over the place, especially here in Chicago. If you're trying to drive with the between the holiday tax, we also have S&P futures down 19, NASDAQ futures down 101. They actually were down on Friday about the same amount. When you say Friday, well, actually the CME was open until 12 o'clock trading the futures on Friday. So it wasn't a holiday for them necessarily. So that was interesting. But anyway, we had traffic issues here in the city. As it's always very important to inconvenience 99% of the people so 1% can make money. What do you think, Jimmy?
Absolutely. But, you know, you knew that we were going to have the NASCAR race this weekend. And, of course, we have it's construction season once again in Chicago. So it's designed
without any construction workers, just construction season.
Exactly. I didn't say there were workers, but there's always the nice yellow, nice orange sign saying you have to do this, have to do that. I will say I was with my dad up, and we were driving to his club, and it was the same thing. In Wilmette, they decided to make a big, huge hole in the middle of Sheridan Road and reroute people, but you didn't see anybody working.
No.
But you have a big hole.
I'm not sure if we just can't find workers. We don't want to find workers. We just want to extend these jobs. Something strange. Not exactly know what it is, but something is. Just, I don't know, you would think you'd want to get the job done, or there'd be bonuses to get the job done, but there clearly is. That's not the way we do things today. I'm not sure why that is, but I think it has to do something with the workers, now whether they just don't want to train people or what. You know, I don't know, but they're not asking me either. So just, when I was at Kennedy, is such an amazing artery here for the city, and yet we can't seem to get the thing to do anything. So I don't get that at all, but I don't know what we can do about that. What do you make of all kinds of interesting pieces of news coming out of this big, beautiful, beautiful, such a beautiful bill? Have you ever seen a more beautiful bill?
No, I haven't. You know, It's smoke and mirrors and a lot of other things.
Yeah, I can say that's one of the things it is. But one of the things that is somewhat interesting, and it just brings up a million different questions in regards to what the motivation is on this stuff. Who didn't pay what? You know, who didn't get on and genuflect in front of the guy in Mar-a-Lago or whatever the hell it is, but somewhere snuck in this bill, and I can't believe that the industry kind of allowed this to sneak through without, you know, getting their own bunch of lobbyists and paying people off, which is, you know, unfortunately the way we do things these days. Maybe always have, but it seems like it's getting more pronounced. If those of you who maybe gamble once in a while, or, you know, gamble a little bit here, a little bit there, which is fine, the deal with gambling always was, and I don't know, I look a little bit at this, Jimmy, and I haven't been to a casino in so long or a racetrack in so long, but just from my experience, there always were, let's put it this way, the law says that all gambling winnings are essentially income, and you have to pay taxes on them. Now, of course, you know.
Makes sense.
Yeah, of course, you know, a lot of people, unless it's, you are sort of forced to, you don't. Not saying that's right. I'm just saying that that's the truth. And but you can deduct your losses if you keep a log and do those kinds of things. You can deduct your losses from the winnings. And the joke always was, if you ever won a, you know, a $2,000 race at Arlington Pike, first thing you do is start picking up tickets, right? So the idea is, if you actually went down, if you went to Vegas, and you won, and there was always a level, there was two levels, one at which you had to inform people, I think, and there's another level, I think we had to withhold. And the joke always was, if you won the, what was Keno, 20 grand if you won it, or 15 or something, if you had to pick 20 numbers out of 80 or some crap, sort of like the version of lottery out there where the girls, the scantily clad, very attractive young ladies would find you at the swimming pool and you'd play Keno, right?
Yes.
Mainly just to see her come by again, not really to play the Keno. Not that anybody would ever do that, right? But anyway, there was always bets, and I think it was, if it was 300 times the original bet, or if I think it was 6 grand, 10 grand, somewhere is the number, where you had to fill out a form, and at some level they actually withheld at the casino. But you could say, gee, I go every week I spend, if you kept a log, you could say, okay, I won 10 grand in a Keno, but I come here, you know, every weekend, and by the way, this weekend I lost 500 something. You could deduct your losses towards your winnings. You could never deduct losses towards ordinary income. So in other words, you can't just say, I went to the track, I lost 50 bucks, I'm taking it off my wages. You could never do that. I'm sounding like I'm a tax guy, but I'm not. It's just out of... But in this bill... But the world has changed for a lot of gamblers now. Last time I went to the track, you walked up there with your cash, and you bought your $2 ticket, your $5 ticket, whatever you're buying. When you cashed it in, they paid you cash. Well, now of course they have to. You do it all you can if you want to, through your credit card and so forth. And people who gamble online, obviously there's a record of all this stuff. So somewhere in this bill, they decided that you can only deduct 90% of your losses, not 100%, towards the winnings. And I'm sitting there going, what the bleep? So if you were some guy who, and I know, Jimmy, we know people like this, who will sit in the bar and the entire time you're talking to them, they're on their machine gambling. It's not within the realm of possibility that they were to, quote, win 200 grand a year and lose 200 grand a year. I mean, you wouldn't want to be... So they essentially break even. State makes money. I mean, people make money, evidently. But now, all of a sudden, these people, they can only deduct... If they made 200 grand and you lose 200 grand, now you owe taxes on 20.
Correct.
Which is an amazing change in this whole mess. And I don't know. I mean, two questions is... Now... I'll go from the securities firm side. Years ago, if you brought stock into PTI or Merrill Lynch or somebody, once I put this on the same level, and you sold it, our reporting, or the clearing firm's reporting to the IRS was, you sold, 1,000 shares of AT&T, wherever the hell AT&T is trading, or say 1,000 shares of IBM, and IBM's trading... 291, guess what? It's 291 grand. And it was up to you to say where you bought it, blah, blah, blah. You might have bought it at, well, I don't think you could have bought it higher than this. I think it's on an all-time record. But say you bought it at 285. Okay, it's up to you to enter the... Well, then, at some point, my brother was giving me this whole story last night because he knows all this stuff. At some point, they started to put the buys in the sells and sent that to the IRS. But they never did that with options. Now, all of a sudden, they're doing it with options as well. So, basically, your stuff is going to the IRS. And it used to be people would, if you did 10 trades a year, people would actually manually put them on a sheet of paper. I bought, 100 shares of this at something. I sold 100 here, and I made or I lost. And the long-term, short-term. You have your dates in there and so forth. Well, now you essentially get a run from the clearing firm. I say now, for a long period of time. So if you want, you just attach that to your tax return. Again, I'm not a tax attorney; it's more of a conversation with Dan, and you do that. Now, so this whole thing with the gambling, it doesn't just bring up the crazy idea that if somehow or another you get tagged with a Keno win, you got of 200 grand, you got to find 220,000 of other losses to offset it. It actually comes down to Who finds out about what? Now, I have no idea, Jimmy, do you, what the reporting requirements are for, like, FanDuel to the IRS, do you?
No, I don't. I admit I'm on DraftKings. So I don't. I've never gotten anything because, again, I don't gamble that much, but you were right. There are people that are, $200-$300 a shot at it. And I guess my question is, being at the Cubs game yesterday, Cubs winning, as you know, they have that 50-50 raffle. Half goes to charity, half goes to the person. The amount was now up to $300,000. So obviously, whoever wins that is now going to have
they're gonna
to
make
report
you,
it.
They're going to make you. No, they're going to make you withhold.
Yeah, they're going to make you withhold.
Or at least fill out a what is it, W-9 or whatever.
I believe it is a W-9 form.
At the very least, they're going to make you do that. But for that high, I bet they withhold probably 25% or 30 or something.
I believe so. Yeah. The funny thing was, Chief, that they usually do it for the games. This one is going from July 4th to July 11th, so that pot is only going to grow. And I can tell you at the game, the people doing the 50-50 rally, people, once they saw $300,000, and they're doing it on your credit card, because as you know, in the ballpark now, you can't use cash.
That's why you won't see me there.
And that the fact that they don't have physical tickets.
Right,
we understand that.
I would tell you what, I would actually go. I mean, if I went with you and you had just on your phone and you got me in, that'd be fine. But one thing, you wouldn't catch me buying like a season ticket without physical tickets. I want to be able to, if I want to give them to, if Matt Byrne wants to go with his family, I just want to give him 4 tickets. I don't want a phone call at 6 o'clock saying they can't get in, the thing didn't go through. I don't want to do that 80 times a year. I mean, the inconvenience is dramatic. I just want to give somebody the tickets. Here, go. That's just saying. But anyway, the point being is now, but this comes down to, I think if people trade, well, I'm not going to say people always tell the other their significant other what they're doing or they don't. Can you imagine if some guy, I'm going to say we see the guys doing it, maybe the ladies doing it too. If some guy is there at the bar every night, or a couple times a week gambling his ass off, and all of a sudden he has to attach a 50-page addendum to his tax return, and his wife goes, "What in God's name is that? Can you go on FanDuel? Can you go on FanDuel at any time and find out all your bets you've done this year?"
I'm on DraftKings, and the answer is yes.
All right. Well, I'm wondering I can't believe they're sending that all to the Fed.
Maybe it's also, there's a threshold. Like, if you make over $10 in interest, the bank has to send a 1099. If it's $600, over $600 in interest on a mortgage, they have to produce that. Maybe there's a limit. I don't know. I mean, honestly, Chief, I don't think I've ever gone over $100 winnings in a year, because I do $1 bets. But I will admit that the people that I know that place hundreds of dollars of bets, I wouldn't be surprised if a 1099 was generated.
And I wonder if it's just on your winnings and you have to chase the losses, or they send them the whole thing, or what? Or they send them anything?
But I would imagine it's the gross amount, and that you would have to prove to the IRS out of the gross amount what was losses, what were winnings.
I mean, a lot of the listeners are probably sitting there and going, "What the bleep is these guys talking about? Who cares?" The thing that makes me care, Jimmy, is that, as people know, my theme of the show, even though it seems totally off the wall, everything is hooked up with everything else. Everything's connected. So as soon as I saw this, I go, "Okay, wait a minute. It's been kind of a half-assed law for a long time that you need to pay income and gambling winnings, but winnings are defined as what you won minus what you lost. And or if you know, most people try to pad the losses, but to be honest, most people lose, right? Or else there wouldn't be businesses.
Right.
So most people lose. But if every time somebody sends a if you made $20,000 at DraftKings, and they send the $20,000 in, but you lost $25,000 at FanDuel. All right, who gets what where? Does the $25,000, maybe because I'm in a securities firm, how does all this reporting go, and what do you have to do? Is this now becoming like somebody that trades all day? If it is, that's kind of burdensome, wouldn't you say? But here's a business, and what it ties into, last week we talked about, or maybe a week before, we talked about who would pay $10 billion for the Lakers, or who would pay this much money for the Cubs, or whatever it is. And the answer, a lot of it has to do with, man, look at the gambling. Look at how much they're picking up on this gambling. Now, the gambling has been the way it is for a while. I'm not saying the laws are perfect. You got to pay in your winnings, minus your losses. Who decided where, what worm came under the rug in the Oval Office or someplace and said, we got to change this. We got to go to 90%. Who even thought that up? And how did it get through without anybody reading it? And how do these firms that now are the savior of the world, how do they say, what the bleep? How did this get through there? And what is the motivation for whoever did it? Why do you really want somebody who is a big swinging bleep that has $2 million worth of gambling winnings, and I think we might know somebody who does probably, and $2 million worth of gambling losses, that guy's got to pay taxes on $20,000? Why? And who decided that, and why didn't somebody say, you're out of your mind? I mean, that's the part that always intrigues me. The law is one thing, but how it got there, I always find incredibly. And how does that industry not have a lobby to stop that?
I have no idea. You know, it's like the new bill in there that you could deduct your the portion of the bill that you could deduct your auto insurance. Not insurance.
Interest
off of your auto, as long as the car is. Assembly within the United
which
States.
Which is so anal, I can't.
Right. I mean, where did they come up with that?
It's whatever. It's the people we have, but yeah. they're making enemies out of people that aren't enemies. Now, foreign producers of cars are enemies.
Well, you know. It depends. If you buy a BMW, a 5 Series that's final assembled in South Carolina, you can deduct that.
Now, for those that don't know the history of this, sorry, Jimmy, to interrupt, but when I was a youth, he said all interest was deductible.
Correct.
And then all of a sudden they wheedled that down. That's why it is so dangerous when people, now back in my day, when I used to start help people with taxes, I should get one of those things, Jimmy. You can still get them online, like the 1978 tax return that's sent to your house. Run that off. I don't know if you remember those things. They're fabulous. They're so interesting. All the tables would send to your house. All the stuff. You didn't need a turbo or anything. It was all right there. So all interest was deductible. So even if you had, I mean, there were no credit cards. So that was interesting. But it was interest on your car, mortgage interest. If you did have some kind of another home loan, whatever it was, all interest was deductible. And your tax rates were higher. And you could take off sales tax, you take off all this stuff. Still, I think you probably can do some of this if you itemize. But then the rates were higher. So, okay, we're going to lower the rates. We're going to get rid of all these deductions. Which, you know, to most people, economically, makes some sense. Problem is, when you pull the rates back up and you don't reinstate the deductions, you don't get back to the same place. You get to a totally different place, right? So They said, okay, the only interest is going to be deductible is mortgage rates, which, if you ask me, should not be deductible either. Now, right now, you can't just change that law. If it was up to me, I would say, okay, next year they're 90%, next year they're 80%. So you shouldn't have that kind of an advantage to people own versus people who rent, in my opinion. But you can't just do it tomorrow because people have calculated what they can pay based on that. So to take it back, would be a long process, wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
But say, when all of a sudden we're saying, all right, automobile loans. I mean, you get an automobile loan or a car that's $100,000. For God's sake, that's a lot of money. And, you know, it's a million other questions I don't want to go into, but if somebody gives you interest free, that's almost income, isn't it?
Yeah, you could argue that, yes.
So whenever you make these kind of, I wish I could find somebody that we could get on the air to say, how did this, who decided to do this? Did it come from the White House? Did it come from the House? Do you think it was in the House bill or the Senate added it?
That's a good question. My gut would say is probably the Senate. I mean, each House has to, you know, put their own little spin on this. You know, and that's the thing. I'm also shocked that they didn't bring back credit card interest deductions. So you get people to spend more on the credit cards.
What if you, when it says gambling, what if you bet, you know, let's say you bet $1,000 on the White Sox to win the World Series, and Roy Hobbs shows up and they win the World Series. And whatever the odds would be, say you win $100,000, but every week you go to the casino and you get your ass kicked, or go to the racetrack. So in fact, you're like down on the year. How do you prove it?
That is a good question.
I mean, you obviously should keep a log of those kinds of things, but most people don't.
No.
At the racetrack, it was easy. It's when picked up a bunch of other tickets. Right, because everybody threw their tickets on the ground when they lost.
Right.
In the casino, you'd have to keep a log of some kind. You probably should anyway, in case you ever did have a big winner and you lost the rest of the time. But I mean, like my nephew said, what's the difference? Most people lose. I go, well, if only the profits are getting reported, then it's a big deal. I mean, you're not going to go to the local saloon and put $100 on the Bears and win $100 and have your local bartender or your local bookie send a report to the IRS. It just kind of opens up a whole new... Do people who go through this place you go through, do they tell you what they report? Or you think they're going to...
No, I don't think so. And again, Chief, I've never received anything because, I mean, honestly, I place $1 to $5 bets.
Yeah, but it shouldn't matter.
Right, and the most ever that I put in is maybe $50.
Okay, so if you win $50, do they? There's got to be somewhere on their site. Maybe by next Monday, you can take a look. Somewhere on their site, it's got to tell you who would they report to where.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's in the disclosures. Yes.
I wonder if it changes with this bill. Anyway, S&P futures down 17. NASDAQ futures down 97. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allman, at front of the board. Jim Lawler in studio. I think we have Mr. John Flanagan on the phone or on the Zoom. S&P futures down 17, NASDAQ futures down 92. Now, we're up a bunch on Friday, or on Thursday. We started to drop, really, on the Friday abbreviated trading session over at the CME. Now, the Euro, these guys traded on Friday. Now, today, they're up 174.7%. The DAX, FTSE up 11.1. CAC around up 15.2. The outsourcing giant WNS shares rallied 14% after takeover by France's Capgemini, whatever the hell that is, Asia. Nikkei down 223.6%, Hang Seng down 28.1%, Shanghai pretty much unchanged. Bonds, we have the 10 years at 4.35, that's up one basis point. The Bund up 2 basis points, 2.58. The bonds were up, or the interest rates were up pretty seriously the last Tuesday and Wednesday. They had been down, Wednesday, Thursday, they had been down, but it made quite a comeback here. We're still not at 5.30. Or 4.5 on the 10-year, but we've made up most of the losses on those rates. On Friday, or on Thursday again, Dow was up 344, S&P up 51, NASDAQ up 207. So we're giving back about half of that, the NASDAQ at least. Oil down 3 cents, 66.97, right back in his middle 60s range after the one shot up, and now we're right back in the middle. Brent up 37 cents, 68.67. Natural gas down 9 cents, 331. RBOB up a penny, 213. Gold down 30 bucks, 33.12. Had a run up last week, but it's with the dollar going down, but now the dollar's ticked up again today. Silver's down 62 cents, 36.46. Foreign exchange, we said the dollar's up a little bit, but the euro's still 117, and the pound is still 136. So it hasn't made much back. We got crypto up 224, 108, 703. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 6:35 a.m. on July 7th, 2025. Let's look at traffic real quick. Inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to outbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to about Thorndale will be about 30 minutes. Inbound on the Eisenhower from Thorndale to JB at 33, outbound at 29. Weather for Chicago, 66 degrees at O'Hare and 77 at Midway. High of around 79 today, mostly cloudy. Tonight, mostly clear skies and a low of 66. Meanwhile, down in Phoenix, Arizona, extreme heat warning in effect. 92 degrees right now, but today it's supposed to get up to 111 degrees. Wow. Very warm with plenty of sunshine down there.
Oh, you got to have sunshine.
Yeah, going to be rough. Let's look at sports real quick. MLB yesterday, White Sox lost to Colorado Rockies 6-4. Cubs, meanwhile, doing pretty good at home. Beat the Cardinals a nice 11-0. So I got, Chief, back to you.
We have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed, yeah.
So, John, what do you got? 2 million in winnings and 1.6 million in losses. Now you're screwed.
I'm the last person to ask about this stuff.
I think you're a closet gambler. Just saying.
Well, life is a gamble, you know.
I'm starting to feel like Charles Kuralt every weekend. I'm going places, but this weekend I had to go down to what do they call a funeral? It's 3 months after the person's either cremated. It's a celebration of life or something.
Yeah.
I was mentioning last week where I was going, but of course it turned out to be even more kind of bizarre. The gentleman who was the lady died, so the guy's still around. He's 92 years old, born in Kentucky. So he had been down there for his brother's funeral a while ago and, like, met all these people and blah, 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 and they all got along real well. And so he invited one of them to come on up if they wanted to come up for this party, I guess you want to call it. Well, 11 people show up, adults with, like, a slew of babies. I don't know where the hell they stayed. I'm going to have to call up down there and find out where they ended up, all of them crashing, but it was quite the scene. But interesting people. I mean, very nice. But there's a great line for anybody who's willing to use it. One one of the people who's from there was talking to one of the guys from Kentucky, and the guy from Kentucky says, "How you doing?" The guy goes, "I'm doing fine. How you doing?" The guy goes, "I ain't fussing about nothing." And I'm sitting there going, "What a great line! I ain't fussing about nothing." John, you could use that in court, I think.
Yeah, well, especially when fussing takes on so much, you know, additional meaning. It could mean just griping or duking it out or shooting somebody.
Yeah, it depends on what you're, you know, however you want to go with fussing. You can kind of sort of do that, but anyway, interesting group. Traffic back and forth, of course, is a nightmare, but nothing compared to last night. It took me over an hour to get back from the south side. This whole idea, when you have an expressway down, to have like a race or something, is just, I don't get it. What do you think about the third party? Elon Musk is going to have a third party.
Oh, yeah, the American party?
Right? Yeah.
Well, Trump's not too happy about it.
You know what? But it's stunning to me. God, I've been ragging about this for how many years? There are all kinds of people, I would say. I mean, this is not digging into who's what where. People knew I was I guess I could say I was a lifelong Democrat, but I really wasn't, because I voted for whoever I thought was best in any election. So I'm probably 50-50 on presidents, Democrat and Republican. I voted for Ford. I voted for, who did Obama run against the second time? I didn't vote for Obama the second time. Voted, yeah. Anyway, so I'm probably 50-50. I think an awful lot of Democrats, I would say moderate, or whatever you want to call them, have no idea what this party is now. I mean, it's not me. And I have a feeling that a real lot of Republicans feel the same way with the Trump gang. That's just not them. I mean, to where if you really pin people down, I think the people who don't feel they have a party maybe outnumber the people who think they do, or maybe it's close, or maybe it's something, but it's somebody. And yet, when somebody says, "Oh man, maybe we should get a third party," people's their sphincter closes up. I mean, why shouldn't we? I mean, why does somebody have to either be on one side or the other, where you have to vote that way regardless of what you feel? And if God help you, if you ever vote against your party, they'll come after you with knives and maybe shoot you like in Minnesota or some other damn thing. Why can't we have another party? Who decided that we're going to have one party more than Russia forever, John?
Well, kind of history has confirmed it, though. You know, I mean, the cases I can think of in the past where there was a rallying around some charismatic individual to create, you know, a third party platform, never went anywhere. And, you know, I mean, if you think to, Teddy Roosevelt in 1912, he split from the Republican Party because his former vice president, Taft, had, you know, gone so off the rails in his view. So he started the Bull Moose Party, which, you know, he ended up caving in on and, you know, won the election pretty much for Woodrow Wilson. And then you have, the Dixiecrats wasn't really 1948 wasn't a rallying around one person. But, you know, think Ross Perot with John Anderson in 1980. There were examples of this. I just don't see it, you know.
Well, what huge advantages, other than we've always had it, is our current... See, for those that don't know, Musk has decided to come up with a third party. What's the American Party or something?
Yeah.
But he has no intention of running anybody for president. And, you know, I, you know what, John? I really support him in this. What he's saying is he wants to run, what is it, 3 or 4 senators and like 10 reps, something along those lines, 10 or 11 or something. I would love somebody to run in my district or in my state that says, "I'm running to represent most of the people." You're never going to represent everybody. Well, you represent everybody, but you're never going to please everybody. I'm going to run, and guess what? I'm going to look at every bill, and I'm going to introduce some that are good for what I think the country and for this state, and you'll never see me having to kowtow to either side that I must vote this way or the other. I don't... if that's your definition of a senator representative, I'm all for it, John. This crap now where if you're the last Republican on the bench or the last Democrat on the bench, God help you. If you ever vote our way, there's no committee assignments, there's no assistance, no that. Screw that. I'm really over this. I mean, I really am. I mean, we've heard from Carl and other people what it's like to be a freshman rep. Screw that. That's not what the Constitution ever meant, in my opinion. I'm no... The idea that you have your own cell phone, that they have to do this, you're not going to get a committee assignment. I don't know how we got there, John, but that's not my America. Whatever. I don't know what you think. Please expound. But the idea that you could have an independent thinking representative or senator, I don't think that's a big problem, do you?
Oh, not at all. And you look at, you know, in the recent voting on Big Beautiful Bill, how the Democrats, you know, are lockstep to a man or woman. You know, there's no room for variation, no room for off the reservation.
Well, the one guy was room on the Republican side quitting.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly they're better on this.
No. But the thing, Tom, you know, the way Trump came to prominence was not with any help from the Republican Party, not from the RNC, certainly. But it was definitely a grassroots revolt against Democrats and Republicans of the old guard, you know. And the way things were shaping up with the Democrats were trying to push people out of the party, as far as I can see. The old moderates had
They pushed me.
Well, yeah, and they had no, the moderates had no place in you know, the messaging, the platform, or anything anymore. So, you know, the Republicans kind of watched as Trump pulled their grassroots support away from everybody else in the field. I mean, Trump was ridiculed as having the least chance in 2016. During the debate process, and you know, the people said otherwise, and the Republicans, I think, have only, you know, grudgingly gone along with this. It isn't like the party now is completely, you know, behind Trump.
Why would they be? Why would anybody be?
This is you know, the reason I applauded Trump in 2016 was because he was loathed equally by both parties, and I thought this is a key to somebody's success. This is the kind of person I could get behind it. Both parties despise him because I despise both parties at that point. But now you have a Democratic Party that has just, you know, lost its mind pretty much and is driving away it looks like the last possible hope they have for any kind of a room from moderates or thinking people. And the addition of a third party to the mix, it may stabilize things, but I think it's just going to continue to fracture. It'll be interesting to see what happens, but I'm more concerned with what's going to do to the Democrats.
See, my I don't know what the solution is, Jen. I honestly don't. I'm not a political scientist. You know more about this than me, but this is not working. I think that somehow or another, whoever gets in the White House recently is. And Trump loves to be on TV all day and flap his jaws. I mean, I don't want to go there, but the fact is, somebody somewhere is driving both parties, it seems, because the same people win no matter who's in there, and the same people lose, meaning us. And they keep saying they're doing all this stuff for lower middle classes. No, they're not. No, they're not. I mean, this bill is for people that are very wealthy. There's no question on that, but the Democrats are the same way. Whoever the cabal is, whoever the people are behind the curtain, you know, and they got a guy who is absolutely spectacular at holding the public's interests on stuff that you're supposed to hate these people, you're supposed to hate those people, you're supposed to, you know, the idea that we're going to have an alligator, Alcatraz, or whatever we're going to call it. I mean, some people really love that stuff. But what does it do for the economy as a whole? What does it do for international trade? What does it do for any of this stuff? And the fact is, you know, not unlike Democrats, all they're doing is lying to people. I mean, the who's the economic advisor guy? The guy with the glasses. They came out and said, "What do you think about Powell or somebody saying that tariffs are going to increase consumer prices?" And right out of the gate, the guy goes, "It looks to us like import prices are lower," which is exactly what we said. Well, guess what? If you listen to Stocks and Jocks, she won't, nor do I really want him to. If you look at this from an economic perspective, what happens here? Okay, the tariffs are added on this end. Now, in order to maintain some semblance of competition, the people who are importing the stuff here, if it's a competitive marketplace, if it's not, it's different. If it's a monopoly, it's different totally. But if it's a competitive marketplace, some people who are importing, say, cars, which is why, are going to lower their price a little bit, at least their manufacturer's list price. They're going to lower their price a little bit so that the tariff hit is not as big as it would be otherwise. And by the way, that would be predicted by anybody who's had two days in an economics class. This is not, although if you mention this to 90% of our population, they have no idea what you're talking about. So it wouldn't surprise me at all that the price of a, quote, Toyota coming into this country is less, marginally less now. But what he didn't say is the tariffs now get added onto that are paid on this end, and your price at a Toyota is probably a lot higher than it was before, even though the Japanese have eaten a piece of it. Now, that to me, John, is the same thing as Sammy Sosa saying. He never ejected himself, and he never broke the laws of the Dominican Republic or the U.S. And people here are dumb enough to say he said he never took steroids. No, he didn't. He never said that. He said he didn't shoot himself in the ass, and he didn't do it in the Dominican Republic or the U.S. That leaves a lot of countries, doesn't it? And it leaves a lot of pills.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that, you know, CYA governed, you know, political pronouncements. So.
But, you know, it's funny, John. The thing that frosts me the most in all this mess is not that a politician, and these guys are probably better at it than most because they can just lie right to their people and they love it, but they're probably better at it than most, but they're not the first. I mean, politicians have been lying. I am stunned, you know, when you know, you and I are of an age when our parents, well, I was lucky. Well, my dad never did, but my stepfather went to on the GI Bill. My father came back from the Army and became a policeman, so he never went to college. But we were the first generation to where middle-class people's kids essentially went to college, right? I mean, so...
In great numbers, yeah.
In great numbers. Now, if you were to look and say what was the single biggest driver of people out of the lower middle classes, well, part of the lower class, maybe into the middle class, was the GI Bill. And all those people, even people who didn't get covered by it, decided that education is a way out of essentially blue-collar jobs, menial jobs, whatever you want to call them, but I wouldn't call it welder a menial job or anything like that, but I'm saying is there a way out of that? So the people in our generation, their parents valued education dramatically. And by the way, education at a pretty high level was not very expensive. So a real lot of people that we know in our generation are pretty damn educated for not a lot of money. I mean, I went through 6 years of two of the best schools in the country, and my total cost was what? $20,000? Well, what the hell, John? I mean, it's not me. It's not what I find out that these guys are saying this stuff. The thing that really disappoints the living bejesus out of me is how many people believe it. Anybody who's ever had half a semester in an economics class doesn't believe this crap these guys are pulling out, and yet everybody believes it. And if the Democrats say something, everybody believes it there too. How do we collectively become so dumb all of a sudden?
Well, we became so partisan that, you know, people put partisanship ahead of, you know, looking beyond that. And, you know, this has always been a problem. You know, people are blinded by their allegiances. And, you know, they're not that curious about what the other side thinks, other than they know it's wrong. There's no way they're going to go there. And they revile people who believe that. So that's become so entrenched that I think anybody on either side is pretty confident that all you have to do is say, here's what, you know, Party X, Party Y says, and everybody springs into action and they shut down their brains. You know, this has always been a problem. And it's gotten us into trouble, you know, in the past too, when people stop thinking or you know, prefer to think something ahead of time before they look at both sides. And this has always been a struggle, and I don't see it any any differently now from what was 200 years ago or 100 years ago.
Well, the social media is made it dramatically different. Nobody reads the whole story. Everything's a five-line tweet or X or whatever you want to call it. Actually, John, I have an article. I wish I could find it. I think you'd find it very interesting, you and Jimmy and Matt. I used to run all this stuff off until my brother accused me of killing 40 trees in the last week, and so I stopped doing that, and of course I'd lose it on the internet. But it was a guy talking about why people become partisan one way or the other. And I thought it was a pretty interesting article where he said most people, we're different. You're in a legal profession, you've always been interested by these things, and oh, by the way, you're retired. Me, my job is to read and watch this stuff for other people because they are trusting me to look at all this crap so they don't have to because they're like a doctor or something. So I manage their money. Plus, I like doing the show and I like learning from it. But by and large, this guy was saying most people, don't take this wrong, Chief, to yourself, most people have a real life. I don't know how else to put it. They have kids. They got to get people off to school. They are a doctor doing this stuff. So what you end up doing, you don't have 10 hours a week or 8, whatever, is to actually dig through all the detail and all these things. So your fallback sort of lazy position is whatever people who think like me, wherever they are on this issue, that's where I am. Whatever side of the other you're on. Oh, if the Republicans like this bill, I'll like it. If the Democrats don't like it, I'm not going to like it. God help me, I'm never going to read it. Right, that type of thing. So the guy, he wasn't making excuses for one side or the other. He just says, this is where you are. It's you all of a sudden, now, if you're a stone cold Republican, you're gonna everything that Trump says is going to be true. And if you're a stone cold Democrat, everything he says is going to be not true. Or at least some Democrat, although I don't feel that way about any Democrat, but I think whatever they say is true. But nobody, you never want to dig in. You just pick the stuff. But it's not because you're, quote, lazy. It's because you just don't have the time. It's not an indictment on people. It's just these people don't have the 8 hours a week it takes to go through all the crap people are saying and actually dig out the details. I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, and this is, that's true. The best example I can think of is Woodrow Wilson in 1960 when he ran, for re-election against Charles Evans Hughes, who was Supreme Court Justice on the Republican side. But Wilson's, winning platform was he kept us out of war. And this is after, war had been raging in Europe for more than 2 years in 1916 at the time of the U.S. election. So, Wilson gets re-elected on the platform he kept us out of war. He's inaugurated March 4th for his second term, and April 6th, the U.S. declares war on Germany after Wilson addressed both houses of Congress asking for a declaration of war. So, everybody just like, poof, that went away. The thing that got him reelected, just completely thrown in the ash can. And there had been a resumption of unrestricted submarine warfare by Germany in the intervening period, but it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, something changed.
Yeah, but it wasn't like it wasn't just a complete eruption in the numbers of attacks on U.S. shipping or civilians or anything else.
Jen, when did the inauguration go to January instead of March? That's a long time,
was,
boy, November
FDR,
to March.
FDR's second term, so in 1937, it moved to January 20th. But his first term, when he was elected in 32, he was inaugurated in March of 33, but it changed after that to, in the 1936
well, that's
election.
Well, that's a long time, 6 months for God's sake, or 5 months.
Yeah, and that's when travel was, took people that long to get from some of these territories and states, to the ceremony or for the candidate to get there. So it took it into, consideration how limited resources were for land travel and how perilous it could be.
Yeah, most people, even if you realize it was different, are using at least post-train timetables, but it was pre-train. Well, actually, Wilson wasn't, but like Lincoln, how long did it take him to get to Illinois to Washington without a train?
Oh, yeah, it's days,
Yeah.
In 1932, when Roosevelt was nominated in Chicago, that's what the Democratic Convention was, he made this dramatic flight from, you know, New York to Chicago to appear at the convention, which, you know, typically candidates didn't do. They waited, you know, they'd get the telegram, you know, you've been nominated, and they'd issue a statement, but they wouldn't actually speak at the convention, let alone fly there. So it was the first time that happened.
John, you got to get closer to the mic. You're back and forth.
That kind of changed everybody's thinking about how, you know, mobile, you know, presidential candidates could be and how quickly they could get around. So, you know, when a couple hours flight, FDR ended up at the Chicago Stadium, you know, spoke to the convention. This is, you know, hours really after his nomination. So that changed. I think that was the, you know, behind the move to move the inauguration date to January instead of March. It was simple.
What kind of a I should know more. I've studied a lot about World War II, but I really don't. I need to know more about World War I. When Wilson ran for his second term, was he already a mess, or did he become a mess in his second term?
Oh, he was, you know, still, you know, very active. He had just gotten remarried, so he was full of vim and vigor. 1916, his first wife had died in the, you know, the White House in 1914, and then he was absolutely devastated and kind of checked out for a while about that. But after he remarried, he was quite, you know, a new man. And he didn't suffer, you know, the debilitating series of strokes until almost a year after the armistice.
How old was he when all that started to happen? He wasn't that old, was he?
He was 60 in 1916. He was born in 1856.
So it wasn't like he was 75 or 80 or something.
Oh, no. But he, you know, the thing that really, he had apparently some history of cardiac problems, although he had a series of not very good doctors, like a lot of presidents. You know.
What was a good cardiac doctor in 1916? What the hell?
The best one was none too good. You know?
Yeah.
And now, I mean, like with Biden, he had a chiropractor, or he had osteopath, I think, was his position. There's nothing against osteopaths, but I think it's not really the mindset you want for, you know, a physician to be president. And there, I mean, Harding, I think, had a chiropractor as his. I mean, none of these people put health on a very high pedestal.
Well, a lady who became a let's say the mother of chiropractic, was what put John Kennedy in the
White House. Oh, yes. She did the whole survey of the neurology of the body and stuff.
It's like a minuscule break here. Let's talk a little about that, because I was reading this article and I mentioned it to my chiropractor. And he goes, "You see that thing on the wall where you got all the pieces of the nerves coming out of your spine, telling you where they all go and everything? That's her. If it wasn't for her, we wouldn't have that poster on the wall. I mean, that's how much they revere. I forget what her name was. SPG is down 15, NASDAQ is down 87. Come back real quick.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and a good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3900. 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low-price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Are you listening to me?
Well, digesting, Reader's Digest, in the back of the dirt.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. Tom Howe, we got Jimmy Waller in studio, we got Matt Byrne on the board, we got John Flanagan, who considers himself a constitutional scholar. By the way, have you ever lost a case?
I never tried very many, Tom. I won both of them.
All right. Well, you know, Denny Crane never lost in Boston Legal.
Right.
So I'm just saying, we're going to play a little piece of Denny Crane, and it's an amazing piece about what people consider the Constitution and Supreme Court, John. Just take a second, man. If you want to throw that one out there, I think it's a riot.
You think you have a constitutional right to conceal a weapon without a carry permit?
I have a right to keep a gun at home. The court says so.
You were on the street.
A man's home is where his heart is. In my case, the penis.
Do you have any idea how many people die from gun violence in this country?
Yeah. Let's make a law. No carrying guns. I'm sure the criminals will obey it.
Show me where in the Constitution it says you can walk the streets armed without a carry permit.
The Constitution says whatever the Supreme Court says it says. As for what the Supreme Court says, that all depends on who's president.
Move the strike.
You don't have to be a legal genius to know that if you've got a president in office who likes guns, and a vice president who likes to hunt, lawyers and quail, and a Supreme Court justice who hunts with him, you're going to have a constitutional right to shoot bad guys in the knee.
John, what do you think of that?
Too true, probably.
who was the guy who shot his attorney? Was it Cheney?
Yeah.
Oh, that's when they were duck hunting with Scalia that time?
Yeah, they were quail hunting.
Yeah.
And when he shot, I think some of the buckshot hit the ice and went up and hit the guy in the ass or something.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it didn't kill him or anything, but
that fueled Saturday Night Live routines for a couple weeks, I think. That's
but he's right. But the Constitution is what the Supreme Court says it is. And who's on the Supreme Court is who the president puts there. I'm not so sure he's all that wrong, John.
By the way, what you and Jimmy were talking about earlier, the restriction on deducting losses under the Big Beautiful Bill for gambling. I was digging around. I was looking at the FanDuel site, and FanDuel, just like in their FAQ, says you can always get, a table of, where you stand in your account. So your wins and your losses are always there. They don't report that except in certain cases where they have to do a W-2G. And it doesn't specify what cases those are, but it would probably be based on amount or risk or something. And only then do they, have to report it to the IRS.
Do they notify you when they notify the IRS what they notify?
Well, it says you will find this on your app when you have done, a game which has consequences and we must report it. So you will know we are doing it. And you can always go in and get your documents, too. Yep, for what's been filed.
So I think what I read last night is it's either in excess of 6,000, and it's or 300 times what you bet.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So if you bet on a some quirky, 1 in 9 zillion chance, and you bet $100 and you win,
mm-hmm.
like and you win what's 100 times 300? It'd be 30,000, right?
Yeah.
It's early yet, but I can still do some math. that they have to report that. But now the question is, so they're only going to report outlying winnings. They're not going to report the losses. You got to put the losses together.
Yeah.
And you'd be hard-pressed to say, you know, I won $30,000 at DraftKings or FanDuel, but by the way, I lost $32,000 at my local bookie. That'd be, you'd be hard-pressed to do that.
Yeah. What's strange, though, Tom, you know, the American Gaming Association came out in support of this bill.
They must not have read this line.
Well, it says, you know, this is on their posting on X, we commend congressional leaders on the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Our industry's ability to sustain quality jobs and deliver economic benefits is significantly enhanced by the tax policies of the OBBBA that support consumers, encourage business innovation and investment, and strengthen competitiveness. Now, they do allude in there to the fact that they look forward to working with, you know, Congress to implement tax changes faced by gamblers. So this indicates that they're, you know, this is the thing that's, you know, they really are concerned about. But it's interesting they would come out.
Well, you got a president with the skin as thin as possible, so you can't say, God, this really sucks, or else the guy's going to be pissed at you.
But, so it makes me think that they had some, you know, share in crafting this thing.
Maybe the original was like 70 or something. But, yeah. But why? I guess, Sam, why would anybody even think of that?
Well, you know, it's got to be something that I don't, you know enough about to be worried about. And it may look on paper like it's not a big deal, but I think this is a big deal for gamblers. It's a huge deal.
Well, we're not just thinking of it as a, sorry to interrupt, but no. It's not just. If it's just you and me going to the, well, I'm not saying you get a bet down on the Tripoli Tap. In the old days, you probably could. There were guys in there that did stuff. I haven't seen them in age. They're all dead. It's not just you and me going and putting a $100 bet on the Bears. We're talking about people saying that the salvation of these games and why Apple and all these other people are paying for all these slots for football and baseball and basketball. Is that everybody's on, even if people don't give a crap about the Bulls, you're watching it because you're gambling every 30 seconds.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about, I mean, that's what they're betting on. I mean, why else would somebody watch, you know, the Chargers play somebody else unless you're betting on it?
Right.
I mean, who gives a crap unless you're from San Diego or wherever they're playing?
Right.
So, I mean,
I think, you know, and even the fantasy stuff too, Tom. I mean, this is, it's to me,
well, that's
really
gambling.
Yeah, but it's been crafted in a way to trigger a reset to the whole system in a way, which makes me think that there is some suspicion or some awareness that things are pushing a breaking point of some kind. And it could be because of the involvement of, you know, dark money or foreign money or whatever else. It certainly, you know, has become obvious in advertising and, you know, televised sports, where the whole thing is tilted now in favor of gambling.
Well, my nephew and I had not the world's best discussion yesterday. I kind of brought this up, and he has friends that, and his point was, who cares? All they do is lose. Okay, that's one way of, obviously somebody's winning, or nobody would have done this.
Right, and it's not, it's the people who are winning seem to be the target.
Yeah, and I don't, and maybe, but to me, the disclosure, you know, I've never been married, girlfriend forever, which is terrific. I don't necessarily, if I'm somewhere, if I'm in Vegas, and I sit there and go, hey, you know, of course, as my mother told me, don't ever bet on Notre Dame or the Bears, because then you're betting with your heart and not your head.
Right.
My mother was a bright lady. So say I disavow her advice and I walk down to the guy in Vegas and I put $100 down, I really don't feel an obligation to tell Audrey. Why should I? I mean,
well, I think that, you know, many men feel that way. You know, if it's $1,000, you know.
Do you think? I'll go back a ways. So I'm going to show my sex.
And women too. I mean,
do you think? If ladies go and play bridge and play for a few bucks, they should come home and tell me they lost $10 at bridge. I don't need to know.
No, the question is when are they, you know, putting enough at risk that, you know, you're looking at, you know, gambling the farm away or the house or the kids or something else.
I'll bet you on it. Jimmy and I know a guy that at the end of the year, I'm going to say his gross bets, Jimmy, am I off? Maybe $1.5 million.
No, I don't think you're off at all.
I might be light.
You could be. We've seen him bet $20,000 at a pop.
Yeah. How many Super Bowl pulls was he in? Like 20 of them or something?
Yeah.
And the lowest one was $500, yeah?
I think 250. And the highest was, I think, $5,000.
Yeah, all cash. But, I mean, there are people. Out of all this entire bill, I mean, if I'm sitting in Washington writing this up, I know Trump went out because he thought he was going to lose Nevada, so he had the tip thing going, and something else going. But, and, you know, we want a lot of people want the stuff from 2017 extended. They had to do something. They weren't just going to let it all go off. I understand that part. I'm just startled that somebody walked in the room and said, you know, this gambling thing, I think people should only be able to deduct 90%. First of all, why didn't somebody look at him like he had four heads? Why isn't a loss the same as a winner? But someplace, somewhere, they must have a hair up their behind that there is, you know, John Flanagan's brother that has $5 million worth of winners and $5 million worth of losers, loves doing it. And oh, by the way, when are we going to pay tax on $500,000? We don't need to make any money. I mean, I can't imagine anybody coming up with that idea. I can't imagine it getting any kind of traction. I can't imagine the industry saying, what are you talking about? Those are the things that, I mean, whether you and I have the same suspicion as how does this stuff get in these bills, basically?
Yeah, I can't believe it's simply, you know, a way of enhancing revenue. It's a policy decision of some kind that it's somehow been determined by somebody, some interest group, to be against public policy for huge, you know, gambling amounts in play that result in any kind of loss, that this needs to be taxed in a way that effectively is going to discourage anybody from gambling.
Well, if you do that, you just drop the price of all these major league teams by 20%, if you ask me.
Yeah. I mean, this is why I'm wondering if it's, you know, a bigger attempt at a reset beyond the gambling industry, but of, you know, advertising revenue and, you know, international finance. I mean, who knows how far somebody has investigated this to decide this is approaching a tipping point or has exceeded it, and now we need some way of, you know, an electroshock to the system. Because this, I think, clearly will have huge ramifications.
Here's my thought, John. And again, I'll lob one out there. You and Jimmy, F paper, A paper, feel free to grade the chief here. I think it's a way for somebody to say, okay, we got this law now. Now we got to find out if people are doing it. I think it's a way of being way more intrusive and finding out who's betting what where, and where everybody, to becomes almost like security traits, where we want to know every single bet everybody's made every place.
Right, and also, you know, to up the ante for the reporting requirements.
That's what I mean. That's what I just said. I just said it in a plebeian way.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I mean, I haven't been to a casino in a long time, but the only time I'm going to put a bet down is walking down and paying cash for it. I mean, I want no part of anybody knowing what I bet on at FanDuel or DraftKings. I wouldn't do that. If I wouldn't have done it before, and I surely won't do it. If all of a sudden the IRS has to know everything I'm betting on, why do they have to care?
Well, there's already indications, I think, that, you know, it's become a zero-sum operation for a while. The Bally's, you know, venture in Chicago and the temporary one at Dine Temple while they build the permanent one, this has not, you know, come in on the mark for whatever the expected revenue was going to be at all. And as it hardly ever does in any kind of a city-involved scheme like this to lure people in to get them to spend money, that there's only so many people and so much money that they're likely to gamble, and you can stretch it out any way you want among various venues, but you're not increasing, I don't think, the amount of foot traffic by any sizable amount. And this is sort of, you know, this is going to be a smackdown to expansion, and I think you'll see a huge contraction. A lot of casinos aren't going to be able to continue to operate.
Well, we went through this. Again, this is a multi. This is why I'm so fascinated by this piece in the bill. Because, as you know, Jen, I mean, I've loved to gamble my whole life, right? I stopped doing most of it when I became a trader. But man, how many nights a week did I used to play poker at Notre Dame? Two, three, before we went to the bar? In a
marathon game.
But, you know, those guys weren't as good of poker players as me. I mean, I was pretty good at it. And what can I tell you? I mean, it's because that's all my family did was gamble. Every Sunday there was a big poker game. Saturday, everybody went to the track. I mean, when I was three, I'd walk around the track and pick up the tickets from the ground and check and see if they were winners. I never found a winner, but that was my job. But anyway, you had the tracks. I'll try and be brief with this. And that's where people got a bet down. Or you play poker, or some saloon had a game in the basement, right? You know, I mean, that was how you gambled. I mean, everybody knew how to play poker. Hell, I could play poker when I was five, for God's sake. But the... then all of a sudden, well, we don't really want that. We're going to have a lottery. Because, by the way, in some of the black communities, they've got this numbers racket. Probably wasn't just the black communities. And we got to compete with that. Okay, we got to compete. Plus, other states got it. Once one state got it, we already got it, right? So we get the lottery, which is, the track pays out 85%, right? The lottery pays out, what, 45, 42, something like that?
Yeah.
So the government right out of the gate is starting to cheat you more than the track. You're way better off going to the... I mean, if you wanted to bet the lottery, you're way better off everybody in the office putting $20 together once a week and betting the trifectas every day, right? At least they paid back 85% in that. Anyway. So then they said,
you're doing it to make money.
Yeah, so then, of course, we're going to have off-track betting. Well, that leaked, and, you know, talk about leaking. Steinbrenner bought Balmoral Park, remember? And everybody's like, why the bleep did he buy the world's sleepiest track? Everybody who owned a track got an off-track betting place. Then got another one, right? So they were all owned by the guys who owned the tracks. But somehow they fell out of it politically. And all of a sudden, we got to have casinos. So we had the boat casinos, right?
Yeah.
And that was the next savior. Every time, in my lifetime, John, in your lifetime, we've been saved by gambling, five times, and we're still broke? I mean, we're saved by the lottery, we're saved by off-track betting, and then we're surely going to be saved by the casinos. So they put the casinos in. But, of course, they're on the water, so if we ever want to decide we don't want them, we can dash with them, right? So but that wasn't going to happen. So, we might as well make land base onto the things there. So now we got so many casinos all over the place. And like you said, John, I think you're right. There's a certain amount of people that are going to gamble 20% income on... You're not going to get everybody gambling all the time. So then all of a sudden now you wonder why, you just mentioned why these casinos are not coming up to snuff. Now, Chicago still does not have bar and restaurant, video poker, and not really slot machines, but I guess they're video slot machines, right? You don't have the one-armed bandit, and coins aren't banging into the thing. Every place I go on the south side, there's four or five people playing in the suburbs, or somebody playing. Now, who's the casino there? The state. You would think... that since Harris Joliet or somebody paid all the money to politicians and all the money for this casino, that if 15 restaurants and bars around their place put the one-armed bandits in there, even though it's really video poker, that they would have a piece of it. No, they don't. Why the hell would I get my ass in the car or on a bus if I'm 90 years old and go to Harris and Joliet when I can walk right into the Pepe's restaurant and sit down and play the game? So how all you're doing is stealing from one to the other.
Yep. Kevin just texted. I think, did you see this now? This tax change won't discourage gambling, but it will encourage the regulars who actually have net positive winnings to work through bookies instead of the, quote, legitimate services.
Right. He's absolutely correct. I mean, it may actually say if I want to put a bet down on the Bears, I'm going to the casino. But even then, if... Say you bet on the Bears to win the Super Bowl and you win 30 grand, then you better find a way to support 30 grand worth of losses. Assuming you have them, I'm not just cheating. Because you can't go to the track and pick up tickets anymore, right? There are no tickets.
No.
That sucks.
Well, is this part of a larger laundering operation?
I think it's part of them wanting to know everything you do. Every time you buy a beer at the ballpark, they want to know. And I find it repulsive. And you know what? I can't get it. I don't understand why people need a credit card to go to the Dunkin' Donuts. You know, give them $5, for God's sake. Nobody needs to know you were there. But I'm the only one who believes that, John. I think it's a way of becoming very intrusive into the industry. Because otherwise, if you weren't going to find out who won, why would you pass this law? I mean, if you're going to imply that if somebody makes $1 billion on an IBM investment, that he has to pay taxes, you're implying that you're going to find out that he made $1 billion in the IBM investment, right? Isn't it part of the deal?
Well, is this also part of a larger strategy for a digital currency by, you know, discouraging people from wanting to carry cash in any great numbers because of the crime, which is, I think, traceable to some heavy-handed decision making about how aggressively crime is going to be washed or fought, or how many convictions you're ever going to get if somebody gets held up. Is this all about suppressing people's freedom to use an anonymous currency sitting in their wallet?
In the immortal words of Matty Weber, 85% of all larceny is done online. Cash is a child now compared to all the stuff that's stolen. I mean, if you walk out of the Tripoli tap and you're, you know, a 90-year-old lady and somebody bops you on the head and steals your purse, it's news if there's $50 in your purse. If somebody puts a thing in the, I don't even know if they have a cash station anymore, and it reads your card and steals $500 on your bank account, nobody gives a crap. You stop the policeman and say, by the way, this machine just stole $500 from me. First thing out of his mouth is, what are you telling me for? Yet if somebody stole $50 out of the little lady's purse, then he's all over it. How do we ever get there?
Well, you would think it would be easier to investigate and, convict people on crimes done electronically.
But there's nobody trained for it, and nobody cares. My buddy, Mr. Bill, my attorney buddy, has a lady, a friend of his, widow from somebody. And one of those things from the... remember they were sending around pictures of, like, your house and saying how they've got you on the dark web and something, something, if you didn't pay them?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, this lady conjures up $10,000 or someplace and goes into a storefront on, like, West Belmont or someplace, gives it to the person, and they buy her a Bitcoin or some crap and send it to whoever this thing was. And Bill says to me, do you know anybody that tracks this kind of stuff down? And I knew somebody, but police don't give a... You call them up, they say, what are you calling me for? Yet there's an address. There's somebody there who took the lady's cash. They don't care. It's bizarre, Jan. And they're worried about you and I spending $20 for a beer at the Cub game. Now look at even that. Now, Jimmy was just there, and he argues about this all the time. Why should the Cubs give a crap? If I'm a beer vendor and I buy the case from the Cubs, whatever they charge me, they charge what, $15 a beer? Say they charge me $12, okay? If I pay them by credit card for the $12, what do they care if I take cash? What do they care? They're getting their $12.
Why does it's about control, whatever.
Yeah, but it's all about why, I don't understand why younger people don't realize that if there's no cash, you lost a chunk of your freedom. If you and I bet $10 on a Cub game tomorrow, I win, you win. Nope. Why does anybody have to know that? I know I'm an old clunk on this stuff, Jan. But hey, what do you make of Jimmy, while you're here, tell Jan what your dad said about the market yesterday.
He believes that we are...
First of all, explain your dad's background, age.
Okay. My dad is 90 years old, worked on Wall Street for 40 years, and he sees that we are headed towards a bubble. You have the market at all-time highs. You have the housing market being too expensive and the rental market being too expensive. So you have a dangerous mix. And he sees that, we can only, as he put it, Newton's third law, whatever goes up must come down. At some point, the market will correct. and we could see another 2008 if we don't watch it.
Now, what does he mean by watch it? It's headed that way. Buy the dip, more money pouring in. How do you stop it until? Question is, how do you never know? How do you know the day?
You don't. And he's just at this point, be very careful at what you invest in. Keep your powder dry. Have some cash. He is not a person that is going to be able to tell you exactly when and where the crash is going to happen.
Gee, who can?
Exactly. It's like when to buy a stock at the exact bottom and when to sell at the exact high. No one knows that.
Well, part of the issue, and I bet if you would have quizzed them, I'll grab lunch with you guys one of these days if I'm invited. If you'd have quizzed them, it's actually, and I'll dig it out here, John, next time you're around, right next to me, the crash of 29. The guy was explaining it as the absolute, what the hell is the word he used? If you sold your stock not at the absolute top, if it went up after you sold it, it was almost like, you know, somebody gave you a disease. Like it was almost like a sin. And if you bought IBM at 5 and sold it at 205 and it went to 210, that somehow or another you gave away $5. And we're all over that mentality now, aren't we? You know, obviously the tax law has something to do with it. I don't want to go through it now because we got Audrey coming. I think Audrey's today. Because Audrey and I had the discussion in 2007. I said, we're in a situation where 85% of the people can't afford to meet the median house. And I think we're way worse than that now. Yet somehow or another, because so many people were able to refinance over a period of time, I don't think any of those, I think a significant percentage of those people could not afford their house if they had to buy it today. You think I'm wrong on that?
Oh, yeah. And with the loss in value of the dollar just since 2008.
Since COVID. It was relentless, but then it really became a slide downhill. Hey, yeah. Real quick before we go, what do you make of this flood in Texas is really something, huh?
God. Well, there's still, was it 80 people missing or 80 people dead?
80 dead and there's a bunch of still missing. 26 feet in 90 minutes. You remember when that happened on the Wisconsin River?
Yeah. We were talking about it just yesterday. Yeah. I remember that happened. Yeah.
One of my buddies on the trading floor was he was helping out some kids, and they got the warning, and they got out of there with like an hour to spare. But there's no real mountains in Wisconsin. There was a guy on CNN, who the hell was telling me this, that he said, they never asked anybody at Fort Hood to help out. Why? He said, we could have put how many helicopters in the air, and they never got the call. I mean, I don't know if they could have helped much, but it seemed like they needed some helicopters right away and something. But boy, I've never seen anything quite like that. It's almost as bad as a thing in Tennessee, but this is way worse because the valley's bigger, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that river has to be, what's the normal width of that river? Now it looks like the Mississippi, for God's sake.
Yeah, I haven't seen illustrations of what the bed looked like beforehand, but it's unrecognizable now. I know that.
Did you back in? We just started the firm, 91 or so, and we went down. There was a potential client down in St. Louis. We flew down there with was it 92? They had those catastrophic floods on the Missouri and Mississippi.
Oh, 93.
Maybe it was 93.
Yeah, with the Red River and Fargo and
No, this is a Missouri and we flew over that to land it. It was something like, John, you had no idea where the Mississippi or the Missouri were. It looked like you were flying over Lake Michigan, except for houses sticking out of it. There was no even hint of where the riverbeds and stuff were. Some of those places, I think on this river that I saw, these places that washed away, I think we're like 200-300 yards from the water, or more than that.
Yeah.
Maybe even a half mile. I mean, it's really something. But my hat's off. All those girls in that camp. I mean, that camp couldn't have been on the shore. It had to be pretty far away. They They probably never dreamed they were in a floodplain.
No, no.
Anyway, it's pretty awful. We're going to go to break here. We come back. I think we have Audrey. S&P futures down 13. NASDAQ futures down 80. Down here, but not very much. We're up pretty high on Wednesday. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it. You could junk it. Or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-639-8620. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It'll be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car. And as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-639-8620. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-639-8620. That's 1-800-639-8620.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right now.
I don't think there's a hell of a lot I can do. We're at the mercy of the computer.
Hello, welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. We have Jim Lawler in studio. We have Matt Byrne on the board. We have John Flanagan on the line. I think we have Audrey Johnson as well. SP Futures down 12. NASDAQ Futures down 75. Just remember, Matt, as a younger man, if the Supreme Court goes out and hunts, you can shoot some guy in the knee.
Just not quail, though.
No, not quail. You know, well, the Dan Quail, maybe, but not anyway. Over in Europe, and rallies here, I think they were down yesterday, but they're definitely up today. Well, at least the DAX is. Some takeover over there. DAX is up 195.8%. Now, the FTSE's down $2. They're unchanged, and the CAC round's up 20.3%. So the DAX is an outlier over there. Over in Asia, Nikkei's down 223.6%. Hang Seng down 28.1%, almost flat. Shanghai's up 81 cents. Let's call that one flat. Bonds up 2 basis points, 4.36. That's the 10-year. The Bund up 2 basis points, 2.58. Japan up 4 basis points, 1.47. On Thursday now, the Dow is up 344. The S&P up 51. NASDAQ up 207. So we're down. We're up down maybe a third of that. So not much more. We're down more, but now we're creeping back up here. Buy the dip. Buy the dip. Oil up 6 cents, 67.06. Brent up 48 cents, 68.78. Natural gas down 7 cents, 3.33. Arbob up a penny, 2.13. Gold, whack 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 on the gold here this morning, down $30. That's 0.9%. Silver down 62 cents, 36.46. As gold keeps flying back and forth, as the dollar keeps flying back and forth. Today the dollar is actually up a little bit, but not very much. It was down last week. The euro's down 0.006. That's not much of a move. But the euro's at 115. It was on the low. It's at 117. It was in the low 115s for a while. British pound is 136. It was like 134 for a while. So, and we have crypto up $28, 108.507. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 7:37 a.m. on July 7th, 2025. Let's look at traffic real quick. Inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to Jane Byrne Interchange at 41 minutes, outbound at 39. Inbound on the Eisenhower from Thorndale to JB at 39 minutes, outbound at 38. Let's look at weather. In Chicago right now, 66 degrees at O'Hare and 68 at Midway. High of around 79 today, mostly cloudy. Tonight, mostly clear skies and a low of 66. Meanwhile, in Phoenix, extreme heat warning in effect. 92 degrees right now, but it's said to be 111 degrees as the high today in Phoenix. Very warm with plenty of sunshine. Meanwhile, in sports, White Sox lost to the Colorado Rockies yesterday, 6-4. But Cubs are at home. They beat the Cardinals, a nice 11-0. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Hey, Jimmy, who's there? Do we have Audrey or we have Nancy?
Yes, you do.
But Audrey, yeah.
We got Audrey. Hey, what's up? How are you? Happy Monday morning.
Happy Monday morning to you, too.
Finally, no AC last night.
Yep. It was so nice to walk outside and actually it would be cooler than it was in the house.
Yeah, boy, it's been it's been rough, and Audrey's little dog, she's pushing 19, so if we can't make our whole walk, wow. She is seriously pissed off at me, doesn't seem to understand that.
Is that right, 19 years old?
She's pushing, yeah.
Wow.
And still is it?
Yeah, she's completely deaf and missing half her teeth, but she still seems to be enjoying life and having her full meal, so as long as she's happy, we're going to help her along here.
It's amazing.
So, yeah, it's a... Stubborn little thing.
She still watches TV regularly. So.
Yeah, we ever saw see a dog watch TV? Stand and barks if any kind of dog or anything comes across, she just goes crazy with it. But she's taught the young poodle the same thing, which is probably not good. But anywho, Odd, what do you make of what's going on in your world? The interest rates have been somewhat stable here, inching back up a little bit. But there doesn't seem, Nance last week was saying, it's still not a whole lot of... movement a little more, and then Jimmy was just saying how his dad's who's 90-ish is all concerned that houses are higher than people can pay and the rents are higher than people can pay, and you're seeing that, but what can you do about it?
Well, I don't think there's much you could do with supply and demand right now. We need a cut in those interest rates. I mean, we really do. I think it's beyond crazy. It would loosen up the supply. It would help moderate prices. Maybe you've got to nobody's moving, as we've talked about multiple times. Nobody's given up their 3% mortgage for a 7%. Even people, seniors, they can't even afford to downsize. If they say they still have a mortgage on their house, anybody actually, you still have a mortgage house at 3, and your needs change, whether it's expanding or contracting in size. If you're going to 7, you're not saving anything. So it's just created a huge roadblock. And while I don't think people expect anything to go back to 3, I don't. But I think if things moderated down 5% range, 6% range, you would at least see a loosening up and people moving, people refinancing, and let this housing market, which is so tied up in knots, let it move a little more freely again.
What is, I think, with the 10-year rate at, maybe not. I was going to say, is it 4.4? I guess 7 isn't so high of a spread. Is it? What's the normal spread? I'd like 2.5 between a 10-year rate and a mortgage?
Right around.
I mean, it's not like it's... John, I don't really keep track of that spread, but it doesn't seem like it's too egregious, does it? I mean, at that...
No, it doesn't. But, you know, I think, you know, if rates were to be lowered, there would be an explosion of house sales because that would, you know, it would long-term result in reduced prices. I think, Roger, you're right. I don't know if this is going to happen under Powell. It doesn't seem like it.
Well, I mean, you're not one of those, I hope, that thinks that the Fed controls long-term rates.
No.
Unless they want to put $4 trillion on the balance sheet like they did during COVID, you really don't control long-term rates. You control the short-term. But I think a lot of people have forgotten that over the last 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, if you drop short-term rates down and pour a lot of money in the system to where everybody thinks there's more inflation, you actually get the long-term rates going up, right?
Yeah.
And you don't really want that. How much did the stuff going down to 2.5-3%? How much did that misprice the market compared to?
If there was so much activity because everybody wanted to get in there. I mean, it did two things. You had you had a big supply and demand, but then the prices always went up because people were competing for the houses. Yeah. But at least people could afford the payment. I mean, you really have just, you know, you really just, it's a, it, to me, it just feels like an artificial halt. Like, it polishes the whole industry hostage, and it's suppressing the builders, it's suppressing everybody. It's suppressing tradespeople, suppressing the housing and furniture, supply, reconstruction thing. It's just damming it up. I mean, that's how I see it. And it's just causing an artificial roadblock to me.
Do you think, I mean, there are those, if you look at the numbers, I mean, if I look at the numbers and see how many people can afford the current price of homes, I think we're worse than we were in 2007, yet they aren't coming down. They don't appear to be. What do you think's propping them up? What, a lack of supply or lack of new ones? Or what, when?
It's a high interest rate.
Yeah.
There's no supply because there's a high interest rate. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, in my opinion, from what I've seen, it's just pricing. It's not even just the, we have to realize the payments have just about doubled. So there's no reason for people to move out of their mortgage, even if they had another kid or two. They're like, we're just going to stay here, put an addition on, or make another bedroom in the basement.
Well, where is
expensive?
Well, this is a question for the Bodias, as they say in the South Side. We had, well, I was talking to actually a guy who keeps track of all this. Our buddy Shanny was saying he lives in Glen Ellyn. So in the last 5 years, his taxes are up 40 to 45%.
Now, well, that's because you live in Illinois.
Well, okay, but I mean, whatever. So, and we all, I think, know how much your insurance has gone up since the cost of those guys to repair anything has gone up. You would think that even if, just on that stuff going up, I mean, where's this money coming from? Is it coming out of, you know, people's entertainment? Is it coming out of, I mean, if you're making the same amount as you did 4 years ago, or say you got a 20% raise, and your taxes are up 40, and something, your insurance is up 35, and price of cars is up something, the tuition's up something, where are people getting the dough? Are they putting it on a credit card, or are they just not doing something else? It doesn't just come in out of thin air. What are you seeing? Well, you're around people more than I am in terms of their finances. Where's it coming out of?
Well, the two things are, credit cards are again at an all-time high, but if you go out in any town and we get, and you look at, for, let's just say the restaurant business, people can't afford to go out. Maybe they might go, used to go out maybe 2-3 times a week. You know, maybe you go out once or twice during the week, you go out Saturday or Sunday 3-4 times maybe. Especially retirees are like, oh, we don't want to cook, let's go out. Well, if that money has disappeared and you have no way to replace it, you're going to cut back on the life's little luxuries like going out to dinner, having that extra glass of wine. Anybody who owns a restaurant right now can tell you how difficult the margins are. And then business is just not there during the week. I know a lot of restaurants, so instead of being open 6 days a week, are like open Wednesday through Sunday, especially in the smaller towns. They're cutting back on.
I'm not so sure, Ed, that if somebody gave us a bar and restaurant, we wouldn't say no thanks. And listen,
well, it's a very tough business right now. Well, at least eggs are down, so that's a good thing.
Yeah,
Waffle House took the shirt surcharge off eggs, so, you know, it's something that could be good about.
So did Denny's, I hear.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't have to build up my little chicken coop in the yard, though. I was looking forward to it.
John, have you ever been to a Waffle House?
Years ago, I think, yeah. Not in a while.
Stupid stuff I do. I bought a truck down in Florida, right? So I'm driving it back, and of course I leave at the crack of dawn, and like 4 o'clock, it's dark, and finally by about 7, I'm getting kind of hungry somewhere in southern Georgia. So I pull into this place that says breakfast, and there's not very many cars there, so I walk in, and the guy goes, well, that'll be a $10 cover. I go, what do you mean a cover? He goes, well, the waitress is naked. And I go, I don't want to look at a naked. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. So I get back in the truck, and I go across the street to the Waffle House. and I'm sitting at the counter, and the people are very pleasant. I had, you know, I mean, I had a waffle. I'm not big on waffles, but the Waffle House, you got to get a waffle, right? And there's a table of 10 people sitting. Everybody had separate checks. Everybody had a coupon, and I don't think anybody left a tip. And I'm sitting there going, the waitresses in these places, they got to go right to heaven if there is such a place. So I leave a $5 tip. I think my picture is on the wall down there. They can't wait to get me back. I mean, I thought the people were fantastic. I mean, the waffle was delicious. I mean, you can't. They don't only come up as far as like Southern Indiana, though, right? I don't know if there's one around here, but anyway, it's my Waffle House story. But
I'm just curious: is this like a themed Waffle House, or
no? It's a chain down south,
and they're all naked.
No, that was a place across the street.
Okay.
That was a place I wanted no part of. I go, it's 7 o'clock.
That got stopped on the naked thing.
Yeah, and I'm like, no. Then I went across the street to the Waffle House. And I'm like, I'm still stunned by the naked thing at 7 in the morning. I mean, good Lord.
I knew the restaurants were having trouble about a year ago. I noticed, places I went to, the staff was apologizing in advance because they added the transaction fee onto the check paying by credit card. Because you could tell their margin was already so thin.
Well, that's a... Boy, Jan and Ed, is that a... Shows you the difference between downtown and the north side, where you still have a lot of people, I think, that are, doing pretty well, and the south side. And the north side... They're not letting you pay cash. On the south side, they're giving you a 3% bonus for paying cash.
Yeah.
We talk about a difference, eh? What, I think the tourist traps are still doing okay, but you just wonder, how much further can we go on the expense side without people's incomes going up? And it seems like the only stool left on there, the only leg left on the stool is the market. Is the wealth
well? That's the thing. Is if you've done well and you're in the market, except for the blip where everybody panicked a few weeks ago, I mean, that wealth is there. That's coming in. Your house is, again, the market's doing good. Your investments, real estate investments, are doing well. If you're a landlord, a lot of them are doing well. So it's. It's a person who just has a job or two jobs. That's the people that are struggling. People that weren't in the market, didn't go for the run up, and now have nothing else to lean on. So the average person who's just working, they're still really struggling. And that's where this mortgage costs and the cost of everything else are really hitting. So I think I'm hoping to see a little relief of that. I see food prices coming down a little bit. There's some better deals out and about. So,
what do you make of? And you're, those who don't know, Ed has been a broker on the floor of the CBOE. She's still a registered rep at PTI, so it's not like she doesn't know anything about stocks. She does. And what do you make of when you see this stuff happening? And we're seeing people like buy the dip last night, this morning, and the market certainly looks strong. The real estate market. I mean, you're in that. It if you're got a house for sale, you're going to get buyers. I mean, it's a. But what do you make of stuff like? And again, this has nothing to do with the individual stocks. I'm not giving any kind of advice or anything. But last week, I've seen this Oracle just go up, right? And that stock didn't move after 2000 for like two decades. Now all of a sudden, it goes up every day. Well, today, it's down a little bit. It's one of the companies in 2000 that when it got to be over 10 times revenue. That and Cisco and some of these other places. I'm not talking about PE. I'm talking about revenue. That wasn't the trigger, but all of a sudden those stocks came plummeting down like there was no tomorrow. Now here we are 25 years later. The stock's 25 years older. Not that that matters. And they're pushing 13 times revenue at this price. Now, everybody's doing what's squawking about it. At some point, I mean, if the market's up another 20% this year and 20%... And nobody's making any money that flows in. I mean, they're making money, but if the amount of earnings doesn't come in, aren't you just looking for kind of a fall? I mean, the houses you're selling for $500,000. What if 2 years from now they're $1 million and nobody's gotten a raise? I mean, at some point, don't you get nervous? When's the point?
I try not to think that far ahead. Anymore, it's too terrible.
I know, it's one transaction after another, and I don't either.
I have enough to worry about.
Well, people call PTI and they want to buy Oracle. Guess what? We buy Oracle. That's what they want to do. It's not like, but I mean, it's somewhere
that's
you look.
That's the whole, you know, they're, instead of, you know, they just, it's too late to jump on the trade. And some people will never figure that out. That's why they don't do well in the market. You know, you can't be, you've either got to be ahead of the train or at the beginning of the train journey. You know, jumping out when the train's almost ready to pull in the station usually doesn't end well for most people. So that's, but that's not people who are really in the market. It's like, oh, well, my neighbor said to buy this, or, you know, I talked to Sally at the grocery checkout. She said this was going to make her a millionaire. So, you know, it depends. People's information is not always.
Yeah, you got to get a little closer to the mic. You're back, going back and forth.
It's my internet. It's not me. I'm in the same place. So blame AT&T. I might lose you then, but we'll try our best. I don't know, Chad. What do you think?
Oh, I'm more pessimistic now than I was 6 months ago. You know, in spite of all the hoopla, but I just find people are worn down now, in a way. And part of it, I noticed just around here over 4th of July, there weren't as many fireworks, which I was very glad about, believe me, because it had gotten out of hand the last couple of years. But there were so few that I began to think it's now a financial question and just an enthusiasm question. People are kind of disheartened.
Dan, you're walking back and forth from the mic too, but...
Sorry, I'll see if I can move around. I think people just feel and look disheartened and kind of worn out, and... You know, I always thought fireworks were a big waste of money, but it didn't seem like it was that big of a waste for the people who were enthusiastic about it. And this year, that's changed.
I think they're all in my neighborhood. It was Nancy's neighborhood. It was. We had more displays out here. Tom and I were at a friend of ours Saturday night, and the fireworks in the neighborhood. I don't know, but we had so many fireworks out there. Didn't have to leave anywhere to see a pretty damn good show. Yeah. I don't know, but it was crazy out here, so maybe they cornered the market. You guys didn't get any.
Yeah, which I'm fine with, too.
Well, the nice thing about
not a firework person myself.
This friend of Odd's and friend of mine, Kathy, is. She, for some reason, John, let's say she got a hair up on her behind about flowers and stuff. Her backyard is one of the most gorgeous things you've ever seen. She spends hours on it, but I mean, think of the nicest one you've ever seen and multiply it by like four. It's unbelievable what she has going on back there.
And her home always looks like a magazine. I always tell people, if you've never been to her house and you don't know the address, just keep going until you see all the flowers. But her patio and the lights and everything, it looks like an HGTV ad.
Well, but on one side, we were watching the fireworks in Tinley. On the other side, it was I don't know who the other guys were, but we were essentially in the middle of two shows. It was pretty neat. Not to mention, I don't know, would I waste something like this on John? Odd, Kathy had the whistle pig.
I think John should be offended already.
Well, okay. The whistle pig, she had the 16-year-old rye, which is, God knows, 300 and some a bottle. I don't know where she got it, but she shared some with me. You know what, John? I haven't, you know, pretty much a glass of wine is all I do now, but I tell you what, was that good? God, was it good? I don't think he'd even find it. But I said, and she works for a beverage company. I said, well, and she's retiring. I said, if you can find, you get me a bottle, I'll pay for it. I mean, I'll pay for it. If you can find me one. And then I got to figure out, who do I invite over? Not some guys that are going to take a shot and say that was just okay. No. I mean, some guys that are, you know, willing to actually... Now, do we even know people like that that would belong in this room? Jimmy'd be out. He'd be out.
People who are abstemious.
Thanks. Will just
drink half a cordial glass and be satisfied.
I bought this one year. I bought this really good cognac for Matty Weber and his buddy, so I had them over for dinner. And I get the snifter glasses. I put them out there. Guess what they do? They all shoot them like it was a shot. And I go, it's cognac, you idiots. What are they? Can't don't put pearls before swine or whatever?
The Hennessy ad, so we're just pounding it.
Yeah.
I'm telling Maddie you called him a pig.
But then, of course, they refilled it and drank it right the second time. But, you know, it was okay with that. But anyway, pretty good stuff. But whenever I see prices get out of whack, it just makes me very nervous. And it seems to me, and you guys can, all three, Jimmy, what your opinion, out of all the people that we know and all the people say that, you know, Odd does business, how can I put this right, Odd, that are normal blue-collar people, that if they put a lot of money in their 401ks, you know, maybe after the 2000 crash, and whether it was before, and bought a home 20 years ago, have an amazing amount of wealth that, to be perfectly blunt, they didn't earn, right? Is that a fair statement?
No. Not if you were smart enough to do something.
I get it. But I'm saying it wasn't like if you put your money, I mean, you could do a lot of theoretical stuff, which is, I'm sure, is all not going to do 2 minutes ago on the show. If you have a marketplace, an economy that is, what's the term, Jenna? If it's anywhere near perfectly competitive, people who save or people who rent shouldn't do that much worse than people who own, right? People who put, you shouldn't be able to put, get a 15% return 5 years in a row in the stock market when you're only getting a 2% raise in your job. If you were to choreograph what an economy should look like, none of that crap should happen, should it?
That's a perfect world, and that's not a perfect world. It's never been like that. It's just not how it works. So that's something that will never exist. So
I'm gonna say that there are people, I knew some of these years and years ago, that is rented in New York or rented in Hyde Park and places here for 35 years. They weren't losers on that.
Well, that's just your opinion. They might have invested in something else otherwise.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They did, but, you know, I'm saying the idea.
Home ownership is still what the average person's pathway to wealth. It is. That's how most people accumulate wealth. They don't have the luxury of an investment broker, so you accumulate wealth in something that's solid. It's like Ma and Pa bought the 2-flat after they bought their little house and paid it out. So that's a different pathway to wealth. But you have to do something. You can't just assume because you sat in a one-bedroom apartment that, you know, the world owes you something.
No, I didn't. Hey, give everybody a shameless plug, will you? How do they find you?
Oh, you can reach me at 708-846-6494. Call or text me or send me an email at audreyjohnson@realtor.com.
But which areas of the market, I mean, does some high-end stuff, mostly, what areas do you think, if you had one, if you wanted a listing tomorrow, what price would you want?
Oh, well, that depends. If I'll take a $10 million house, if I have a $10 million buyer.
Well, yeah. Duh.
I'm good with that.
If you have a $10 million house, you call Flanagan and say it's just for you.
Yeah, just write
me a check.
Yeah.
I think, you know what, I think a viable market, a good house, no matter what the price rate. I'm happy with everything. I'll find a buyer and a seller for anything I can get here. I'm pretty much happy with every price range.
Well, it seems like you're doing a lot of action where people are either selling the house at 450, buying the townhome at 325. That area seems to me, and I don't get into your stuff that much, but it seems to me that whenever you got one in there, people are clamoring for it.
Well, your starter home, you know, is 350 to 450 now, so that's kind of like your average right now. So that's just where things are. So anything between 250 and 500 is a pretty good, pretty marketable property. That's a good property.
If you got one in the $1.5 million, $2 million range, is it hard for somebody to get a jumbo, or are they okay to get?
Well, again, that depends on their financials. But most people who are out looking are already pre-qualified or have the money in the bank. It's a different market. It's a luxury market. It's a different market.
Well, Art, thank you very much, John. Thank you. Are you going to be one of the candidates in the third party?
Nope. I'm sitting on the sidelines for the moment.
You can't. We're getting too old to sit in the sidelines much more. You got to get in there. Fight, fight.
That's how you live to be old.
I've been burned by every party I've been associated with at some point. So
Yeah, but you got to try a new one. They haven't burned you yet. They don't even exist.
There's still time.
I'm going to be smarter, I think, this time. So.
Oh, God. You sound like Russell when he was on the school board. He never wants to run for anything again. He had to take his kids out of the school because they were after him so bad. God. Anyway, thank you, guys. SP Futures down 23. NASDAQ Futures down 124. Jimmy, Matt, good job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. JetBlue Airways. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be. Visit jetblue.com. Empower HR, your human resources partner. That's empowerhr.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. BDL Compliance Consulting. Visit bdlcc.com. DAX Research. Listen to David Andelman on Mondays and Thursdays and go to dacsresearch.net.
See your future. Be your future.